Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 592. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Shahid. What is up, good sir?
What's up, everybody? Long time no talk. Making my special appearance. Nobody got fired. Roman Reigns didn't cut a bad promo because he didn't have to cut a promo.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I guess it did just dawn on me that I still haven't watched SmackDown yet.
Yeah, I've watched bits and pieces, and heel asshole Roman Reigns is the Roman Reigns the world needs. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I haven't even seen that much, but I'm here for it. I definitely did not hate Reigns as much as some people did, but. He kind of needed a different spark, and this direction has really helped him out. And it really does help out that he looked like he spent a lot of time in the gym in his days away from the WWE Performance Center.
New teeth, new body, new smirk, everything. New manager. It's just surreal just having Paul Heyman out there doing his Brock Lesnar routine with Roman Reigns. Because who would have guessed that would ever happen?
Did they tease that a few years back that he was going to try to have Brock and Roman on his team?
That was a long time ago, like years ago.
Yeah, I guess I remember that. But ever since that, I guess I've kind of put the thought out of my mind. So, yeah, that thought has been pretty dormant for, I would conservatively say, probably the last 4 years or so.
Yeah, and not only that, when Heyman had his interview, you know, his segment, blah, 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 got over, the interaction between Reigns and Jey Uso before his title match, like, you know, Tate's giving me this shot, I was like, well, whatever, you know, let's see what you can do, I know your brother will win. So let's see what you got. And he just said all nonchalant, just sitting down. I was like, oh, asshole Roman Reigns is awesome. Because it was just, you know, don't think because we family that's going to make a difference.
Oh.
The title.
Yeah, I definitely need to search out SmackDown just for that promo then.
Like, it was like a quick 30-minute segment. Then, you know, people was wondering, like, you know, why Big E? Why isn't he in the match? It's kind of like, I guess they're saving him for later. You know, don't have him take a loss. And
yeah.
Jey Uso, once he was in there, it's like, okay, they're not going to have him win, are they? But then it's kind of set up family versus family so Roman can murder his his cousin.
Yeah, and it definitely makes him look like more of a villain if he's beating up his cousin. So it's a good look not necessarily a good look, but yeah, you know what I mean. It's a good way to go about getting people to boo Roman Reigns and to cement in the heel status.
Exactly. I mean, SmackDown was basically like heel central between that and Bailey finally turned on Sasha Banks, and letting everyone, remind everyone that, like, one of the gifts of Sasha Banks is when she's taking a beating, it looks like she's getting murdered.
She is quite the saleswoman. Like, more so than, as much as the other ladies are very good, her sales jobs, I think, would be the tops amongst the four horsewomen.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it was to the point where people thought she was going to have a shorter career because of, like, you know, all the bumps she took, and it seemed like it was kind of like people talk about having a bump card, and she was trying to fill her out like, you know, bingo on Sunday.
Yeah, but she is definitely, she hasn't been put in as many gimmick matches. I mean, her and Charlotte really, like, When they started trading titles, it was like gimmick match after gimmick match, and they were all ones where it's like high damage content, whether it was Hell in a Cell. Did they do a Falls Count Anywhere?
I mean, they've seemed like they've done everything. Yeah, because Sasha tapped her out with the bank statement on, like, a railing.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've definitely kept her out of those styles of matches. It's probably good for any of the wrestlers involved, honestly, to take a spell in tag team wrestling. So she definitely took less bumps that way, being in a tag team. But yeah, she's been really solid. Like, it just seemed like she had injury problems right after she got called up. And I don't know if it was just a direct cause of those gimmick matches, or you know, it was just kind of the bad luck.
I mean, just probably hit. A combination of both. Sometimes it's just bad luck, and then with her body type kind of leans toward that. And I know people are, like, worried about that anyway, because it's kind of like slender women having those type of matches. So that mouth pick up quick, and thinking what happened with Paige, even though it was a freak injury, and, like, other women, that body type. It's like, you don't want that to happen to one of your future stars. You know, took some time off. Came back, and ever since her and Bailey got together, you knew this was happening. It was just kind of a slow burn, and they were just teasing it. And when it happened, it's kind of like, it's funny. Bailey's an awesome baby face, but sometimes the best baby faces make great heels, because Bailey's a heel, just a evil ass soccer mom.
I've always said that they did a terrible job of communicating who Bailey was on the main roster. So to have her turn over a new leaf is fantastic. Like, it was a cool way to introduce her in NXT, and it was a great journey there, but they either needed to reboot that journey, or they kind of needed to go a different direction with her. And I guess that's the one thing I've liked too, is they've rebranded Sasha a little bit too, because throwing in the blueprint, and I'm trying to think of what what other little gimmick Bailey was giving her.
The golden role models.
Yeah, I thought that there was something else other than the boss and then the blueprint. It kind of in that vein. But it does give her something else to bank, something else to play off of in the future, which I think is useful. Because I don't think they ever explained the boss character very well on WWE, like, main TV either.
No, it's just a nickname. It's like, oh, she's the boss. Why? Because she says so. And it's kind of like, there's a lot of that with most of the people from NXT. It's either they ignore the gimmick completely and, like, start over. They assume everyone knows the gimmick, or they just exaggerate way too much, like the Street Profits. Like, let's take something that worked in small doses and, like, turn it to 11,000 until people complain and then, you know, change it. So she ran into that like the other women did. She bounced back. And then you knew the breaker was coming, and Bailey beat the dog piss out of her. So you're going to have a slow burn with that. And it kind of helps because, like, the women's division is, like, in a funny place where the Riot Squad's back as a tag team, but the Iconics, one of the main tag teams they had, I know Vince got this thing, like, he liked blondes, and Peyton Royce is cute. Billy Kay is the star of that team. So the plan apparently was break up the team so Peyton Royce can get a singles push and Billy Kay is, like, you know, get in where you fit in, and that is a bad choice for multiple reasons.
Chris and I talked about it a little bit last week. Billy Kay has all the personality. Like, Peyton Royce is better in the ring, but I'm not sure that she's so much more superior that she should be getting the nod over Billy Kay.
Yeah, that's all. That's visual. That's all that is. It's looks. Because it's kind of like, Peyton's like Billy Gunn. It's a Billy Kay role, dog. It's not like, she's got the role, she seems athletic, so she's going to get called Mrs. Ass. I guess, but no, Billie Kay has all the charisma. She has the personality like Peyton Royce does best when she's playing off Billie Kay. And, you know, in the ring, it's like Peyton Royce might be better, but she, we ain't talking about, like, you know, she ain't an Oscar or nothing like that. Like, she's not that much better where it's kind of like that noticeable to just push Billie Kay to the curb. And to be perfectly honest, I'd rather push the person that's not making racist jokes every 2 or 3 months on Twitter than saying, oops, I didn't mean it.
Oh, I guess I've missed those.
I'm glad you did. I wish I did. The latest one was some fan like asked, you know, a black fan like, oh, can you wish me happy birthday? And she sent a gif of a monkey dancing.
Oh my god.
Like a gorilla with a monkey to my happy birthday. And yeah.
Oh, come on. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to avoid that gif.
I mean it, bite. Or something, and it's not the first time she's done stuff like that, and it's kind of like slid on the radar, but that one didn't. And people was like, oh, she don't know. I'm like, her tag team partner is always Miss Black Lives Matter and equality, anything like that. It's kind of like, people made the joke that Australia is nothing but the British version of Texas. And I mean, for every person that's cool like Chris Hemsworth, you got people like Mel Gibson that are batshit crazy. So, who knows? But, yeah, that was issues to begin with, and it's kind of like, it's not super noticeable if you don't pay attention, and you wouldn't necessarily pay attention because, you know, you don't think about that with Peyton Royce, but All you gotta do is do a Twitter search and have her name. You go on Twitter, and people kind of feel a certain way. It's kind of like, yeah, y'all pushing the wrong person. I should be pushing Billie Kay. People say, oh, you're only pushing Billie Kay because you don't like Peyton Royce. They're like, yeah, we want to root for the person that's not a bigot.
And the one that has a personality. There is a lot to that. It's kind of funny how often the WWE ignores the whole personality part. But I guess with their little makeup session, it would be interesting to see if they end up using Kay as Peyton Royce's mouthpiece moving forward.
Yeah, I guess time will tell. So, yeah, like, you know, that the Riot Squad back together as a team. And the two Karens of Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler as the tag team champions, I'm kind of like, was Vince McMahon just playing a joke? The only thing they have in common is bullies. That is it. It's kind of like, Shayna is a bully that you like, and Nia Jax is a bully you don't like. And somehow they was like, oh, let's put these two big bullies as a tag team and have them not like each other. Recognize they don't like each other, don't get along, but just win because they're just so damn dominant.
Yeah, it's a very odd look, especially after the double win by the Riot Squad because the other person was distracting the other person, depending upon whether it was Jax or Baszler in the match, which... I feel like they don't normally successfully execute this whole love-hate relationship motif, even though they use it a lot. But I think that it's working for these two ladies. But it's probably just because the WWE women are generally that good.
Yeah, and it's not even a love-hate. It's like they don't like each other. At all, and they acknowledge that they don't like each other. Like, they wouldn't be this Jump Street. And they're like, you know, whatever. Like, we might as well do it. We're both good. We don't gotta like each other, be friends. All right, let's win the tag team titles. And then, you know, Shayna smacks Nia Jax in the face. And then they have a title match, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you. I have never seen that type of submission. Somebody using one person's body to tap out the other person.
Oh.
At the same time, like, she basically used Sasha to choke out Bailey.
Yeah.
And it didn't look contrived, like when Natalya does a double sharpshooter. It didn't look fake. It looked like some movie shit. I'm like, Yeah, Shayna's up. They make Shayna like a badass. Like, she basically beat both of them by herself. And then, you know, Nia, Mr. I accidentally broke your nose by punching you in the face. Like, that is a hell of a tag team. The only way they would lose is by some nonsense. So the fact they're establishing it now kind of makes sense.
Yeah. The future shenanigans that happen will be completely foreseen. Like, I do think that they're probably going to keep the titles on them at least for a little while here. But I don't foresee a long run for them. Like, this is kind of set to implode, like, I would say in 3 months max. Like, this isn't going to be a slow burn like Bayley and Sasha.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I mean, you got women, it's kind of like they rotate them out. Like, I didn't even think I'll ever see Mickie James wrestle again. And now she's back feuding with Natalya and... I can't think of her name.
Oh, Lana?
Lana. Because I had seen her the longest, and I'm kind of like, I'm glad she's in Mickie James again. It's just weird, like, seeing women I saw back in, like, 2009. And now I'm seeing them in 2020. I'm like, hey, if it's good enough for the men, it's good enough for the women. You're just not used to women lasting that long.
Yeah. Especially ones that have become mothers in the meantime, too. Yeah, usually, like, they're tapped out and ready to be that way.
Yeah, everybody else from that generation are moms or have been retired for a long time. So the fact that they're not retired, they're still wrestling, they're still getting TV time, is kudos to them. And, you know, the women doing their thing, even like their two biggest women are out and they don't use Naomi like they should. It's kind of like the women they use. So kudos to that. But enough about the broads. I'm sorry, excuse me, the ladies. Big enough shine. Let us talk about the Hurt Business, because that promo Cedric Alexander cut was perfect. I'd be mad too. Every time I come out with my friends, I'm getting beat up. I'm like, I need new friends. And this whole, why am I getting beat up? I was supposed to be tag team or Ricochet. His name's the one and only, so obviously he's selfish. And then Apollo Crews, all he cares about is getting a U.S. title. I'm like, I ain't getting paid. I'm just getting beat up. Like, forget that nonsense. Like, I'm going to be smart.
Yeah, it was one of those times that, like, it felt like that angle was going nowhere. And I was so happy that Monday happened, because I'm like, oh, they're actually telling, you know, like, I guess with Bayley and Sasha, it was an obvious long-term storyline. With Cedric, I just thought it was, you know, another recruiting thing. And then when he came back to him, I thought that for the second time, when MVP came back, like, I thought it was almost more of a trolling moment and that it was going to be dropped, but he kind of kept on hinting and kept on trying to get Cedric in there. And, I hope it's better for everyone all around, because clearly, Cedric is not going to be getting in the way of, Bobby Lashley. One way or the other. So, yeah, the Hurt Business, just, God love them. They have really brought back the WWE mid-card for the first time in a solid decade plus.
They need to be in the main event. Like, I mean, like, they ruled a mid, it's like they are overqualified for the mid-card. And they just stopped wasting time with, like, Ricochet and Apollo Crews. And I like the fact where it was, like, it's an organic thing. Like, they've been teasing it for the longest, like, you know, every time they don't have any problem beating up Apollo Crews. If you told them no, they never bother like recruiting Ricochet because they figure he's a chump. But like with Cedric, they were like, nah, let's let him be. He got some potential, and it was kind of building and building. And then he does it, but they don't like go too much into it. And then Shelton Benjamin's got this look like Vince from Fast and Furious, like, y'all know, I'm gonna keep my eye on you, make sure you're seeing the right thing. Cause you might be, but you might not be. Like that whole thing, like, I ain't just trusting you all at one night. And then seeing Cedric get the win, and now he got the shirt. They're taking pictures with the suits on. And I'm like, if somebody would have told you 3 years ago You're just going to have an awesome stable led by MVP. And it was Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and Cedric Alexander. You'd be like, what universe am I living in? But I'm like, it's the same WWE universe where Rey Mysterio's son is having great matches. That's the WWE universe we are. I remember watching, seeing MVP on a Saturday afternoon on some indie show wrestling in front of like 25 people.
Oh.
Like, WCCW, like World Class Championship Wrestling. He was wrestling Chavo Guerrero. It was pre-COVID. It was barely anybody there. It was like, I'm watching this on a Saturday, like 6 o'clock on like public access. And I'm like, this is what my life has come to. And now I see MVP with a brand new contract, basically like revitalized the whole mid-card of WWE and like, what, 4 or 5 people's careers? Like, Lashley was flailing. Shelton Benjamin wasn't getting any TV time since Brock left. And look at him now.
And you can even say that for Alexander and Ricochet and Apollo Crews. Like,
yes, all of them.
Oh, yeah. Like, they were not going anywhere. Like, now, Apollo Crews did seem to get a little bit of a push straight out of the gate when he moved over from SmackDown for, you know, for whatever reason. And it's, in some ways, it's disappointing to see his positive momentum get halted, but the Hurt Business has been so good, and Bobby Lashley is just someone that, like, I can't believe that his whole WWE run, like, even the fact that he was in a match with the now President of the United States, which is still bizarre, you know, like, he's never really had a sustained, like, main event push. And, like, he's showing why he should be in the main event. Like, he really is no different than Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, it was kind of that whole thing where it's like, he should be better than what he is. And you see him in Impact, it's like, this is the Bobby Lashley that everyone knew he could be because he was just a cocky badass. And then he comes back and it's kind of like, let's make fake sisters. Like, all that crap with Sami Zayn, I'm kind of like, oh my God, they pushed him worse than they did the first time. And then him having a mouthpiece with, like, Leo Rush was fine, so it was like, yeah, Bobby, show your ass. Like, show your glutes. Like, you know, show off your glutes. And I'm kind of like, what in the slave auction is this? Like, this is just not working. So to see him now as, you know, the U.S. champ and getting interviewed, tomorrow, I want to be world champ because I want people... You know, I want to be the black Superman and have little kids who look like me, realize they can be champ, and not the chumps that look like Kofi Kingston, I guess, which he didn't say. So, and I mean, look, Lashley McIntyre would be a match. And they similar, like, you know, Lashley one of the few people that kind of, like, physically can stand up to, because it's kind of like, McIntyre's a very big man.
Oh.
But a show with not a whole lot of big men on the show. So you're going to need somebody that's kind of like his size. Like Randy Orton has his height, but it's like Drew probably got like 15, 20 pounds of muscle. Even though Randy Orton's not the small man himself. Lashley's probably the only person on Raw is kind of like go toe-to-toe, and it looks like a fair fight.
Definitely. And I would, I hope he gets there at some point, but... This has been a nice kind of restart for Lashley that, like you said, it kind of felt like this organic restart. This whole Hurt Business thing's just run way smoother than a lot of things in the WWE recently. Like, it's kind of weird, honestly.
It just works. And not only does it work on the main part, it works on Raw Underground. Done a show with you since Raw Underground started?
I don't think so. We might have done a show right around the time that this started.
I was so happy I get to talk about Raw Underground. Because let me tell you something. I remember when this whole thing started, and I'm like, what in the world is this? You got Shane McMahon with a rat kumite? Like, what is going on? You got women dancing. You got rap music. You got all these NXT people. And they just fighting. And I was like, this is weird, but let me give it a chance. I was watching, like, it's the funny thing was, normally it's only like, what, 10 minutes total? And I remember the first night, people either loved it, they were like, what in the world is this mess? And it ruined the show. And other people was like, I need more. And it was just so polarized. And I'm like, he got people talking about it. Because it's kind of like, this is working. I don't know where it's going to lead to, but it's definitely interesting. You get to use people that you normally wouldn't use. You get to, you know, get to see Dolph Ziggler. Like, yeah, Dolph Ziggler not being a dickhead is a badass. Like, he can actually fight. Like, you can see, having people who can, like, you know, not be used normally have, like, a 30-second fight. Oh, Titus O'Neil shows up, beats up two people, get beat up by a third person. The Hurt Business just shows up, and it's kind of like, all right, we're going to fight. We take over. And Shane's like that. He's just like Don King. Anything can happen. Come on, like, the door's open. And it's just my favorite one, or one of my favorite ones, was when Jessamyn Duke was knocked out Billy Kay. And I'm like, it's like Billy Kay was fighting Sagat. Like, it's built like a praying mantis that she can fight in real life. And Peyton Royce just threw her to the wolf after they team broke up. And I'm like, man. This is hilarious. Like, I just love every part of Raw Underground. Like, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's taking stuff that happens in a Raw storyline, finishing there, like the whole Aleister Black Kevin Owens thing, started on Raw and finished on Raw Underground. Like, they fought multiple segments till whoever that big bully was came in and took the glory by beating up both of them. And then the perfect thing is they can still have that storyline keep going on because neither one of them beat the other. And it's kind of like, it's just organic. Like, you want to show a fight, you can't start in Raw, finish it Raw Underground. I'm a fan. I love Raw Underground. I have no idea why. And like, it's goofy, it makes no sense, but it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it's fun.
Yeah, like, it's a real change of pace to the rest of the WWE product. Currently, like, just the whole vibe of it, because yeah, I think we did talk. It must have been the first week, because I think I do remember us talking about the Ziggler finally having some type of fire in a match for about the first time in 5 years. But it's just continued to, like, it's still confounding why exactly they're allowing this to happen. Other than the fact that it's basically just like, hey, it's the boss's son, so whatever he says goes, is essentially what they're basing it off of. But like you said, like, they've done a great job of finishing stuff off, you know, bringing in new names without having to feature them in long storylines like Jessamyn Duke. And because Marina Shafir showed up that same night too, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was there laughing after Billy Kay got laid out. And you know, it was like the week before Shayna Baszler showed up. It's like Shane shows up with his big bodyguard, like, hey, you want to fight? Come on in. You know why it works? Because it's in one spot. You've been in the Performance Center, or now you're in the Thunderdome. And I still hate that damn name. I'm like, you're in one spot each week. And it's kind of like, okay, if you can't handle it here, go around the corner, make a left where the basement is. You're going to see a big black dude. You're going to see an old white man and some Air Force Ones. When you see him, there you go. You can handle that there. And it's like, it's a perfect Shane McMahon. Like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's more modern than anything WWE normally does, because, like, Shane tends to be, he keeps up with things. He might be, like, 2 years behind and not 11 years behind like WWE tends to be. And it's just kind of like, it only takes up, what, 10 minutes at the most? 15 minutes? Like, I'm like, what, 10, 11 minutes? That's it. Have, like, three segments, get things across, and then move on. And I wonder if they'll be able to do this, like, you know, when COVID's done and we have a crowd in here. But right now, when you don't have a crowd and you need to kill time, it's perfect. Like, I don't know who came up with this or how they convinced Vince. I'm like, I know it's his son, but still.
Oh, yeah. It's not like
nothing, because it ain't Triple H. It ain't Stephanie that came up with it. It's Shane. and we've heard all the jokes about Shane and Vince, and between that and the rumors like Shane having, like, you know, moving up a creative, I'm like, hey.
Anything to shake things up would be a positive. I mean, and this really, like, it's kind of shocking that between the Hurt Business and this Raw Underground segment, like, just Raw does genuinely feel better than SmackDown right now. Like, even though SmackDown obviously kind of has the bigger stage.
Yeah, Raw's fun. I remember, like, I had kind of gave up on Raw, and then I started watching again. And, like, the past couple months, Raw just been fun. It's kind of like, they just had people be, part of it is, they just had people just being, like, you had Bayley and Sasha doing a thing, Asuka being the MVP, Randy Orton being better than he's been, like, 6 or 7 years. Like, it's just been the Hurt Business doing their thing, like, you know, and Seth Rollins is CrossFit Joe Osteen. Dressing like a woman with his one glove, like a supervillain. And you know what's funny? He's like the centerpiece of the show, and he's not the champ. He never fights for the title, but he seems like his stuff is the most important stuff on Raw.
I guess I hadn't thought about it, but he's kind of in John Cena territory at this point, where they're like, you've had the title enough and it never seems to work out when you have it, but we're going to give you, like, every big segment on the show.
He doesn't need the belt. Like, he's got to that part where we know how good he is. Having a title's not going to make a difference. No point putting him in there. And it's kind of like, yeah, he's feeling like, I have to say, I wasn't expecting this Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio feud. One, incorporating so many people, like, it started by Kevin Owens and Aleister Black, and then this Dominic Mysterio thing, I did not see coming at all. I mean, I know he did some moves and everything like this, but I was like, I did not expect him having good. I know he's been in matches with, like, people that can make anybody look good. He's still got to carry his weight, and it's kind of like, he looks like, if I didn't know who he was, I would think, oh, it's a good cruiserweight.
Except for the fact that he's 6'2 or whatever the hell he is.
Yeah, like, he's doing Rey Mysterio moves, even though he's, like, double Rey Mysterio size.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess he's lanky enough that he might be in the cruiserweight weight class, but God damn, man. Yeah, that is one thing. I just keep on going, how does he have a son that tall?
But he's not tall. His parents not tall. I mean, it's like, well, Shaq didn't have tall parents, so, you know, things happen.
Oh, yeah. the joy of genetics. But one way or the other, yeah, he has really done everything that you could ask of someone. Like, because I do know that he's trained a decent chunk, because he was up at the Storm Wrestling Academy before that closed. And he's kind of been around, but it's always kind of crazy to see anyone skip that NXT step at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny where he has natural talent. He's the son of probably the greatest wrestler of our generation. Like, Cam made a good point. Like, you can make your argument, like, North American wrestler. Who's better than Rey Mysterio? I mean, Rey's been doing it since he was, like, 17. He's still doing it. Like, he's been doing this for a long time, and he's better than he's been in a long time. Like, it's just amazing to see him do that now, like, to the point where his son is old enough to do that. And I don't know how hilarious this was, seeing the Mysterio family just beat up Murphy. All four of them, including the sister and the mom, was just hilarious. I'm like, and then they took pictures on WWE.com. Oh. Afterwards. I'm like, this is some narcos shit right here. This is amazing. I just laughed my ass off. then then Ray's wife gets in and his sister, and I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is just, that's how the show ends, with a smile on your face. Like, normally, you know, Raw ends on a happy note, like somebody wins a match. Not a family beats up somebody with a bunch of candlesticks and you're happy for them.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to be excited about, but it was fitting given the circumstances. Because I don't know how long Ray's going to be out at this point, but you know, the only other thing that they can really do to avenge everything that's happened to the family is to do the same thing to Seth Rollins.
Seth will do it, and it's kind of like, it's a funny thing where I'm looking forward to this storyline, even though it's kind of like, it just oozes nepotism up. And, like, we would be feeling a lot different if this was, you know, Triple H's daughter. something like that. Or, you know, if it was The Rock's daughter doing this. Because, yeah. It's like, it's Ray's son, and it's kind of like, remember, it's funny. Remember Dominic from that ladder match with Eddie Guerrero? That little boy with the bad bleached blonde hair, and Michael Cole talking about, man, you don't need to be blood. We adopted two kids, and it's still love, and love's important, and that's what they're fighting for. And I'm like, what? Maury Povich nonsense is Michael Cole talking about? And I remember everybody just crapping on that stuff. Like, this is insane. And now that little boy grew up to be a WWE superstar, still wrestling with his dad. It's kind of like, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. playing with Ken Griffey Sr., but Ken Griffey Sr. is still an all-star.
Oh. Yeah, that part would have been even hard to duplicate now.
And Gordie Howe, Mark Howe, closest thing.
That probably is, but Gordy still wasn't really an all-star at that point.
True. I was trying to be nice. he was still getting in on, oh, we're going to let the old man in. He could still skate. But no, I enjoy watching Raw. And there was a time when I was kind of like, I kind of given up on Raw. And they, I like the underground, Thunderdome thing was weird at first, but it's kind of like, it's good having crowd noise.
Oh.
And it's like, yeah. You know, the pitch is still goofy, but it's kind of like, you get used to it. It's like, it's just there. Unless, at least the fans, like, it's not like they're asleep, and they're trying to clean out the, you know, fans put up, like, Nazi salutes and all that crap. I mean, you knew something like that was going to happen. You got to kind of weed that out. So,
yeah.
It's uncharted territory. They're doing the best they can do. I give props to them, and we'll see. And I guess it's NXT.
I was a little shocked this week, though. I was kind of happy that they decided to lead off with Finn Balor versus Adam Cole for the vacant NXT championship.
Yeah, they've done stuff like that before, having like the title match first. But I know when they announced that, people assume it's going to be something's going to happen. They're going to have another match the following week, or like that. It's like, no. Balor won clean. Cole shook his hand, was kind of like, you know, almost babyface like. The better man won. I respect him. Come back next time. And I can't remember, they have a backstage like, you know, Balor there shaking Triple H's hand and Regal's hand, and then him shaking like Adam Cole's hand, like all backstage in that itty bitty spot. I'm like, yeah, this is different. Like, they treated it like a big deal, and they gave it time, like post match. And I know some asshole was like, you know, NXT, I don't know about the developmental system because Finn Balor's champ, he's 39. I'm like, NXT ain't been developmental for a long time. Oh. And Finn Balor might be 39, but he looked like he's 27.
I can't believe people are still busting out that argument. Like, that should have been dead at least 3 years ago. And I think I'm being generous with that. I'm more in your boat of at least five at this point that it hasn't been developmental.
Y'all think Brisango needs developmental work? I mean, what do you think, Timothy Thatcher, Kushida? Oh, we need to train him in a WWE style. What are we talking about? Like, no. Oh yeah, we got this kid Mercedes Martinez. We got to show her the ropes. Stop being dumb. Like, no. They are a two-hour show on national TV, and when they had fans, they were having shows, takeovers, and arenas that was seating 13,000 to 15,000 people. That ain't developmental anymore. This ain't the Bo Dallas days. This ain't the FCW days anymore. Like, that's done.
Yeah. It really is. So, yeah, Finn Balor gives them, like, he was the only difference. Like, the other guys in that four-way, 60-minute match, they'd just been around NXT too much recently. And that was kind of their main sin, more than anything. And Balor kind of freshens up the storylines. Like, he hasn't really done much since he got back there. But I also feel like between Walter and a couple other storylines, like, he's had a lot of COVID problems this year in his storylines.
Yeah, like, but, you know, Cole doesn't need it. It seems like Cole... It seems like something weird's going on with Undisputed Era anyway, so...
Just the fact that he accepted the loss and was that gracious about it. And really, all things considered, with Pat McAfee, he didn't really rub it in. He's just like, yeah, I was the better man. Like, I'm the wrestler. Like, come on, people.
Yeah, like, you know, kudos to Pat McAfee for being a lot better than anyone thought he would be. I'm like, yeah, he might be a putter. He's still an athlete. And he probably, you know, he seemed like he cared enough to get training. And that's the thing where it's like we passed the Mongo McMichael days where these athletes coming in embarrassing themselves. Like, these people that's getting it right now tend to, like, I'm going to get some work in so I don't look stupid. So, no, it's like Adam Cole's acting like a baby face, but the rest of UE's acting like heels. That's the weird thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because later in the day, later in the show, Roderick Strong was getting a little bit of help with Bobby Fish there.
Just Mr. Conspiracy Man.
Which one of those knuckleheads believes in conspiracies? Both of them?
Bobby Fish.
Bobby Fish.
QAnon man, Bobby Fish, you know, the man with the mustache from Bioshock. Every time I see Bobby Fish, I just look at him like he's a video game villain from, like, the vaudeville era. I don't know if it's the mustache, the haircut, or just, yeah.
It's the whole package. I don't know. That was really strange, like, because I thought he was staying away from the Performance Center because of his own health reasons. But then he's been back recently, and then he was curiously absent this time around. It'd be nice if there was any type of injury roster that the WWE needed to fill out weekly so that we could at least keep track of who should and should not be on TV for various reasons.
Lower body injury.
Lower body injury.
They do it in hockey. It's like, oh, what happened? His arm broke my upper body one day at a time.
Oh, yeah. His head just smacked into the boards. Upper body injury. Pretty sure that's called a concussion, guys.
No, it's going one day at a time. No, NXT is in a funny spot where a lot of people have left lately to go to the main roster, but they still got plenty of names. It's just kind of like a funny spot. Like, man, that title thing was snake bitten. Basically putting both belts on Keith Lee to, like, hit a rating and then have him give one title up, lose to Karrion Kross because he's going to the main roster, and then Karrion Kross gets hurt winning the title, so he has to give the belt up. he might as well just kept it on Adam Cole.
Yeah, that's why I was just like, I could kind of understand the logic behind doing the 60-minute Iron Man match with the four people, because they're just sitting there going, we just did a tournament for the U.S. Championship. We cannot turn around and do another tournament here. It probably could have worked as just a four-man tournament, but I guess I applaud their creativity in some way, even if I thought that it was kind of hokey to then end up getting a second match out of it anyway.
Yeah. It's a funny thing with NXT where the main event right now has all the small guys and the mid-card has all the big guys. I mean, Damian Priest is the NXT, is the North American Championship, Mr. Mortal Kombat himself. You know, you got Killian Dane, you got Bronson Reed, Dijakovic. Like, these are all, like, very tall or very big people. And then, meanwhile, you know, Finn Balor didn't announce his weight. He's a woman.
Well, I mean, it was still killing me that Adam Cole was listed as, like, 6'2", 210 or something.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, come the fuck on. Like, that guy is barely taller than me, and I'm 5'9". Like, he is barely taller than me.
They listen to that man size like he Julio Jones, and I'm like, who are y'all fooling? Ain't a snowball's chance in hell. He that big and that tall. If he's 6'2", I'm 6'8". I might as well be a power forward. Like, and I don't Adam Cole size. But we all know what Adam Cole looks like. He is a very, like, he did, normally people go to WWE and they get bigger. He went to WWE, he got smaller. I don't know why. I don't know. No one knows. It is what it is. Who cares? Like, he makes it work and it's fine. Don't gotta lie about the size. It's like, come on, we got working eyes.
Yeah, that was I argued a long time ago, because I think Dusty was on a show, so that'll give you some idea about the WWE just being silly, trying to pump up people's weight and size. It's like, we know what those people look like now. You know, like, you see those stats on football, like, maybe Julio Jones is... I guess I did not realize he exaggerated maybe what his size was.
No, he's a big man that's really a big man, but they, like, listing him, like, Adam Cole, like, he's almost Julio Jones size. So I'm like...
I got you.
Like, y'all making Adam Cole, like, he's, like, an inch shorter than Eric Lindros. Like, what are you talking about? Like, stop! I know what Adam... I have eyes. I know what Adam Cole looks like. I know what big... You can... They got big people in NXT. I see Dominik Dijakovic every day. Velveteen Dream is a deceptively very big man. And when he's in the ring with Adam Cole, they do not look like they're eye to eye. So if you're telling me Adam Cole is the height he hyped, then you better be telling me that the Dream is like 6'6". And since you're not saying that, that means you're lying about Adam Cole. Like, yeah, he's 6'2" if he's standing on somebody's neck.
Yeah, he might need a few more inches than standing on someone's neck to get to 6'2". Just speaking from experience on that one. Yeah, it is kind of weird that the small guys are in the main event and the big guys are in the mid-card situation for NXT.
It's weird who to get, like, Bronson Reed getting a push. I'm like, they like him. Because normally people that's built like that don't get pushes.
No. Like, it's been kind of interesting. Like, I know that they definitely pushed Kevin Owens on the main roster, but I'm not sure that you can really even compare Bronson Reed's size to Kevin Owens. Like, Kevin Owens was never that big.
Bronson Reed's a very big man. Like, he is noticeably big. And, like, he's athletic, but it's kind of like, normally you had that body type, and you're not in the Samoan family, you do not get a push. Like, or you're a comedy act. Like, it's kind of like, because it's like, he's big, but he's not. He's a more athletic Otis Clay. Like, a much more athletic.
Yeah.
It's like, he got that build. Like, he's a very big man that just moves well. It's like, he consistently gets time. He consistently gets matches. And I'm like, somebody must like him. He's on NXT almost every damn week.
Yeah, for a show that you definitely, because they only do 2 hours and they have enough of a roster for NXT, you usually get bumped like at least once a month. And Bronson Reed has really been on for probably a solid month and a half straight, one way or the other. You know, even if it was just for a promo. And, I think he's done a great job with everything that has been given to him. Like, and it was kind of funny that it all started with, maybe not all started, but the ass-kicking by Karrion Kross really kind of led into most of this push.
Funny how that works. Getting beat up is the start of, you know, oh, he's a tough guy, he took it. Like, yeah, he lost, but he fought. And it worked, because it's like, yeah, he did. Now he's here. Like, he's credible. I can see him in a title match. I still laugh at Damian Priest, because what his game is like, you know, calling people ugly and having sex.
Yeah, that is a real throwback of a gimmick, I would have to say. That is definitely an 80s and 90s almost style gimmick.
With his Mortal Kombat voice. Oh, come on here, we're going to party all night long. You interview me, you can party too. Go to Outworld. Like the archer, if be like, I ain't seen one bow, I ain't seen one arrow. How did he get infamy? Is he Oliver Queen? Like, the gimmick is just, it makes no sense, but it works. He comes out there, he shoots the thing, and they play the music. And I remember when they first introduced, I'm like, this gimmick is dumb. This is some Mortal Kombat nonsense. And they just kept pushing it down people's throat and over and over and over again. And it's just kind of like, you know what? All right, you guys win. It's like you just learned to, like, it's going to be here, so whatever. And like now it's kind of like, I still think he's a goofball. But he has, you know, entertaining matches. He's definitely living the gimmick. And it's a weird gimmick, because I always make the joke, like, WWE, they normally don't like have you like women.
Oh.
And clearly, they talk about him like, yeah, he took the picture with Triple H and three women.
Yeah. Like a hot tub. Yeah, 100% a throwback gimmick. Like, it, kind of like, you know, that Raw, the one Raw Underground with dancers on it. But yeah, they non-sexualize a lot of stuff. Like, between him and what's his name there, Angel Garza on Raw, like, those are the only two guys that have been allowed to have some sexy time with the ladies.
Can we talk about Angel Garza, like, quick aside? Did they want us to forget that we watched him propose to his girlfriend on NXT? Like, that happened. We saw it. He got married. They didn't mention the marriage part. He won the Cruiserweight title, got in the ring with his woman, beautiful woman, and proposed. He said yes. And then all of a sudden, you see him on Raw, just flirting it up with Charlie Caruso, like, you know, she ready to risk it all. Like, yeah, you know, you want a rose. I know how to treat my women with women, and blah, blah, blah. And she just melting. And Zelina Vega's just having a hissy fit. And now he's doing this with, who's this girl from what show?
Oh,
this blonde girl, like, this on you. Like, she just showed up one week, and she's just there every week.
Oh.
That's weird.
Yeah, Debbie Burn. Why am I remembering her name? What is my problem?
Because she's been there for like a month and a half. That's why. She gets pushed. I thought it was going to be like dating Ivar because he cheap. I was watching this like, normally they do these little crossovers. It'll just last like a week or two. Not some ongoing thing. I'm like, and she seemed to be into it. She, like, she doing a good job. Somebody's not trained to, like, be in the wrestling business. You wouldn't know.
Or even necessarily acting, because I think she's just from The Bachelorette or some type of show like that.
2020.
Yeah, some type of show that I'm not going to ever watch.
Yeah, I knew she was on a USA show. I don't know what the show was. And she's like, oh, she's on this such and such show. She likes Angel Garza. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll see her. You know, it's a one-off thing for promote the show. And then she shows up next week. And then the following week
after that.
And I was like, every week she's there. And now she was somebody else. I'm like, what's going on? Did she sign a contract? Like, what is this?
She's turned into...
Someone don't have a job, but she...
Who was that woman that AJ Styles was supposedly sleeping with?
Oh, Claire Lynch.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
If she could turn into some type of character like that.
AJ, I'm having your baby. You know, I remember watching Impact, and I remember that storyline, and I was like, "What in the hell is this?" Like, this is because they found a horrible actress that was giving horrible lies, and it was kind of like, what's the point? Okay, so he had a bastard child coming. What's that got to do with the X Division title? I did not get that. This just seemed out of nowhere. So, but no, you're right about, I've always made the joke. They just decided one day, you know what? If our wrestlers aren't married, they ain't having sex.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of weird, like, because I guess the only other thing that I could think that there was, like, some level of sexual intrigue was way back in the Facebook Live era when we had Team Little Big, which...
Yeah, that ended up being... Long-term storyline, they went back to him. I know you like me, Braun. I remember we used to team up together. And I remember the Facebook Live thing, and I remember them being team. I'm like, either they're real good actors and actresses, or it's something there, because I'm like, we used to make the joke, if I'm Buddy Murphy, I won't be careful about buying that engagement ring.
Yeah, well, he didn't, and that was probably best for his interests.
Yeah, lost a girl, lost his first name.
Oh, yeah, ain't that a bear?
Yeah, but NXT. I did like the whole interaction with because they had multiple women segments, like Shotzi and Io Shirai, before that with Robert Stone, and. I'm glad, like, I don't want anyone, like, don't make the mistake thinking Io Shirai's just nice. It's like, yeah, you helped me out until you looked at my belt, like, you better watch it. I'm still a champ, bitch. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that setup. Like, I like Shotzi Blackheart a lot, but I also don't really in any way expect her to be winning the championship this early in her NXT tenure. Like, that just happens for people that are really being shot to the moon.
Yeah, and it's like, she's nice, she's good, but I'm like, I don't know. If it ain't Rhea Ripley, I don't know who being EO.
Oh,
like, yeah. Still EO like she damn Akuma. Like, I'm better than, like, I still laugh. And to set up with Tegan Knox. Like, Tegan, you only got here because you got help. And you always need help until your friends betray you. Like, I don't need any help. I did this by myself. And you had a nice little story. I'm still going to beat your ass. And she basically just did it.
Yeah. EO has really been set up as a bit of a Terminator of sorts here. And that was the only reason to keep Ripley around. And I guess that's probably one of the only reasons to have her win in the main event.
The Battle of the Badasses. But it's funny where it's kind of like, I guess it's a cage match. Like, that match is the main event and not the title match. And they just build them up like, we got these two badass women. They don't like each other. Put them in a cage. Let them fight. It was simple. And that's what they did. And just seeing Mercedes Martinez in a WWE ring in 2020 is just kind of like, I remember, like, I never saw any of her matches, but I knew who she was because it always came up, like, you know, wrestling magazines. Like, this indie woman has just, like, just been wrestling forever. And then she popped up in the Cruiserweight Classic. I mean, the Mae Young Classic. Then she shows up again. And then she signs, has a few matches, and then gets repackaged, like, you know, I'm this badass. Like, I'm going to beat people up. And I laugh. It's like Robert Stone and Aaliyah, they sound like a comedy act. But it works, because I still laugh at the whole Robert Stone thing. I'm like, I remember Robbie E. I'm like, you'll put a suit on him, you can take some of the grease out of his hair. I still, like, can't hide Robbie E. from me.
And it's one of those times where, like, there's such a departure. Like, it's kind of funny that Robert Stone and Aaliyah are kind of running their mouths, and Martinez is the one that kind of needs to back everything up. And it's not a dynamic that the WWE uses that much, so it feels kind of fresh, even though on the face of it, I agree with you. Like, it seems a really silly trio.
It's not. Because it's so, you wouldn't think Mercedes Martinez would do anything with those two. Because those two are like goofballs, but like, it works. I mean, and it gives Aaliyah something to do. Poor, what's her face? Vanessa Bourne. Like, I'll be rent, not buying. Because her and Aaliyah was a team, and then now you see Aaliyah on TV. You don't see Vanessa Bourne on TV. It's kind of like, that's how it goes. And it's like, now it's kind of like, women tend to be, all the women tend to be getting involved like multiple things, like that dinner with the Garganos thing. Oh. I still laugh at that, because it's just kind of like, they're just so, Johnny, he don't need to go anywhere else. He might as well stay at NXT. Just have fun with his wife doing silly stuff. Like, you know, if you make enough money, what's the point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, why not? Like, it's just one of those things where they just need to come up with fresh stuff for him to get involved in. That, because, I mean, that's kind of what Adam Cole was doing with Pat McAfee. It's like, after you have a 400-some-odd-day reign as champion, like, there aren't a whole lot of places to go other than specialty matches or, you know, super grudge matches.
Yeah, like, because basically it's kind of like Adam Cole at the point where he might as well just go to main roster, and it seemed like that's where he'll probably be going anyway. Johnny Gargano, like, if he was going to go to main roster, he would have went by now, so.
Oh.
He's won everything, he's done everything, but it's almost like a, you know, what do you do with somebody that's done everything, but you're not going to move him up? Like, unless they're going to move him to Raw, SmackDown, which they haven't, I'm like, they haven't by now. I don't see them doing time soon. Have them do fun stuff, like, you know, with the 10-inch flat screen TV and all that nonsense, and try to recruit Tegan Knox. And hey, you got to kill 2 hours somehow. So
yeah, it worked to help kill some of the time. That's for sure. I don't think there's anything else that was big on that show, honestly.
Yeah, they set up the tag match for next week for Breezango and Imperium. And which basically the whole thing is, yeah, I don't like Imperium because they boring. That's the whole, like, Imperium don't like them because, like, they out here dancing. They don't respect the tag team titles. Breezango, they're like Imperium, like, yeah, y'all can wrestle, but they don't got no flash. It's like, where the sizzle at? Y'all boring. That's the whole storyline. Like, after 5 years and multiple injuries and setbacks, we finally got the titles, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to let these boring bozos get the belts back.
Sometimes the best writing is the most obvious. And that one could be very obvious, but it works.
Yeah, because, like, Breezango can wrestle. Like, get all the gimmicks and all that stuff. It's like, both of them can wrestle. And you forget about that. It's like, I always remember that match they have with the Usos, where it's like, the stuff Tyler Breeze was doing, like a broomstick and all that stuff. I'm like, that match was amazing, because they were wrestling their ass off, like, doing, like, a gimmick match. And to the point where you thought they could beat the Usos, when the Usos was, like, you know, the best tag team on the planet. And it's kind of like, you give Breezango time, they can do something. I wouldn't have guessed they've been on NXT. I'm glad it's there. And it's kind of like, you know, kudos to them. They seem to be having fun. Tyler Breeze always tells people, like, you mad about your career? Like, I got 3 houses. I'm fine. Like, no, I'm doing just fine. So, like, Fandango probably like, nope, I'm living good. I've been here a long time. I ain't fired. I'm good to go. So that, and I guess we can wrap up. One, it's just funny. Boy, seeing Velveteen Dream now don't feel the same as when you used to see Velveteen Dream.
That cloud is gonna hang over his head until there's something that either clears things up, or he is no longer on the roster. Like, I really don't see any other outcome for him. Like, but when there's like, it's one of those things that I'm like, if you send it out digitally, like, you're just screwed. Like, there's no two ways about it. It's either a yes, I sent that stuff, or no, I didn't.
Yeah, and if they say they sent it, they got proof. It's like, it's there. To which they say, oh, we investigated, we ain't seen nothing. The guy's like, you ain't asking me, I can show you right now. It's like, they don't want to know. It's basically like, because if they wanted to know, he'd be gone. If they really wanted him to be gone, he'd be gone. Because other people in a situation that was even close to that. You saw what happened at NXT UK got shut down because they had to fire. It seemed like they had to fire had the damn people on that show. So if they think you did anything, they let you go. But if they want you, like the same thing on Matt Riddle, don't worry about it, bro. Be all right. But it don't help. Like, one, he comes out and he wrestles like a heel now. He got that stupid down his beard. And all this stuff going on, I'm just kind of like, you know. I did laugh like Kushido jumped him with church shoes on. This shit so slides. I'm like, how do you get jumped by an itty bitty Japanese man that only had traction in his shoes? So.
Oh, I just love that they're called church shoes. Man.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, because it's kind of like, hey, that's an interesting pairing, so see how that goes. But no, beyond that, that's kind of it. Like, WWE seems like they're doing the best they can with the situation they have at hand, and a lot of people didn't have chances of getting chances, so that's that. Did you watch the Broken Skull episode with Jerry Lawler?
No. Did you?
Yeah, I watched it. It's weird because it's a lot of stuff I already knew from watching the Lawler documentary that he had, because it was like kind of that. And it's just kind of like, yeah, Lawler was, you're talking about best of all time. His name never comes up, and it kind of should.
Well,
he had a long run. It just seemed like it was like in white one spot, but it's like he did a lot of stuff. And that Andy Kaufman thing was a real big deal.
Yeah, I mean, when you get segments on the Tonight Show, when there was a captive audience for the show, that's pretty impressive. And yeah, it's almost like Rey Mysterio, where you're like, man, he's outlasted everyone else from his era.
Yes. He's still around, and unfortunately, he still looks the same. which you shouldn't.
Yeah, well, and that part of it is still creepy as shit.
Yeah, he did talk about how he was shooting Man on the Moon, how he did, him and Jim Carrey did not get along, because it was kind of like Jim Carrey thought that he was trying to do method acting being Andy Kaufman, and he thought Lawler and Kaufman didn't like each other in real life, so he was kind of like acting that way.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was like, it was a funny story. It's like, yeah, Jim Carrey can't, I don't know how truthful it is, but the story did not put Jim Carrey in a flattering light at all.
Well, I guess, what are you going to do? Those poor actors.
I know how Tommy Lee Jones felt about Jim Carrey doing Batman Forever. Like, I cannot stomach his buffoonery. Like, he hated Jim Carrey to the point where he wanted to strangle him. And I'm like, yeah, I can tell watching the movie. That was not the buddy comedy chemistry. And I was surprised. But no, it was basically talking about his career, how he got in the thing, all stuff that happened in Memphis, and then how he became a commentator. He said he didn't do prep on purpose. He didn't want to know what's going on so he could react naturally to it.
Oh.
And it was a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one way to do things.
I know people had a different opinion talking about he's just lazy. Like, he just shows up eating a hot dog and not do prep work. And his whole thing is like, yeah, JR did all that. I didn't do that. I just wanted to be there and call what I see. And that way, because if I know what's happening, I don't have the same energy. I mean, there's something to be said about that.
Well, and I do think that there's a difference, especially, like, they definitely had the play-by-play Keller commentator kind of division. Sometimes with the three-man booths, that gets spread out a little bit, because some of the other people can carry the play-by-play stuff from time to time. But, yeah, they kind of had very defined roles, and I think it is easier if you're just doing Keller commentary and not really worrying about match stuff ever, that it's, to me, it's a little bit easier to be lazy or, you know, just kind of wanting to be surprised by the action.
It was interesting how he talked about that, because he was like, you know, he started out doing it with Vince. He was like, you know, he basically did it because one day, it's just like, oh, Randy, like, where Randy at? It's like, turn on TNT. He's on Nitro. So they asked Kane to do color commentary for like 1 week, and he just stayed, and he's telling a story about, you know, Vince was like, I want you to pretend I have a toupee and make fun of it. Like, that was Vince McMahon's idea. Because I remember Law used to be talking about his hair, Vince be all surprised like that. Vince is a weirdo. But it's like, oh, he started with that, and then, yeah, his thing with Jim Ross and with Cole. And the one thing Lawler said is like the difference between then and now is kind of like the way commentators are now. They're kind of neutered because Vince doesn't want them to be stars. Because it's like, yeah, the commentators used to be stars, like back in the day, up until like the Attitude Era. Now it's kind of like, you know, Cole's the last one. And everybody else is kind of like, you know, they do their job, they're noticeable, and it's kind of like, they're good, but no one becomes a superstar being a commentary. Like, you get too high, you get kind of swatted down and moved aside. And it's just fun. Like, you know, he got a point. Although, for the most part, now the commentary is fine. Like, you know, I can't stand Corey Graves or whatever. Raw's fine with Samoa Joe and Saxton. And perfect way to wrap up. I don't know how they convinced Wade Barrett to do NXT.
Oh.
I love Wade Barrett on NXT. Because it is kind of like, he's just kind of guessed like, what week was it? He's like, what in the world you got to go? They just hit people with chairs and sticks. That y'all condone that? Like, he was indignant. I forgot what match it was. Somebody was like, hit somebody with a stick, and he lost his mind. Like, what in the world you guys are doing here?
Yeah.
Is this the type of business you run down? Like, he was mad. Like, is this the business y'all run here? What type of nonsense is this?
It, to me, he certainly has something of a, and it's more from an approach wise, more than a voice wise, but like a Nigel McGuinness type of approach, to how to commentate. You know, I don't know if it's just because they're both English that they have a similar sensibility about how to commentate things, but I do feel like they're very similar, and I love Nigel's work in ROH and in the WWE. So it's kind of good to have a voice like that again on TV. If I definitely was not a Mauro Ranallo detractor, but I'm completely peachy with Vic Joseph taking his place also.
Yeah, like, Mauro just left, and, like, God bless Mauro. Like, you want to leave, let him leave. Like, you know, I'm always good with people being happy doing what they're doing. If you're not happy anymore, no point in doing it. And I used to laugh at people, then, like, Mauro, like, yeah, because he do pop culture reference from stuff that you don't like, because you like that old shit from, like, 1999. If he was talking about Puddle of Mud, you wouldn't be complaining. But see, he's talking about Nicki Minaj, and the last rap you listened to was Eminem, like the Marshall Mathers show. Like, oh, Mauro need to cut that out trying to be cool. It's like, it ain't his fault you a goddamn nerd. So that part I always laughed at. But, you know, he left, and Vic Joseph's fine. Beth Phoenix is more than fine, and, like, that's a good three-man thing. And it's funny, you know, I might just be here 1 week. But they're going to have a title match because I show up another week. And now he's just there.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess considering that Mauro is gone, it would almost be strange to see Wade Barrett take an exit at this point.
Wow. Wade. It's just fun. Like, NXT came on. It was like, you know, oh, guess who we got? Special guest. Wade Barrett doing commentary. I'm like, this was a surprise, but. I mean, I'm cool with it, you know. He was fine doing it for NWA Power, apparently. It's kind of like, you know, they had the issues he had, so, yeah.
I did not know he was on Power with three R's. Yuck.
The less said about them, the better, but whatever it is. So, yeah, it seemed like, you know, commentary, they're fine, matches, they're fine. It's just kind of now, like, figure out what you want to do and how you're going to handle it. I know football, like, I'm sure when they watch the football games, some old, well, they get 10% crowds and 15% crowds. Why can't we? And I'm like, you really want to do Royal Rumble in a 40,000 seat arena with 4,000 people? That's going to look like an episode. That's going to look like an Impact pay-per-view. Like, no. Not do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's almost better to do the, I don't know if there's a step up between, like, the NXT-sized venues, which is maybe 3,000 at the most. Like, there's always a weird step for places like that to, like, like, the only step up, almost, is going to, you know, a regular arena. Like, I always think about Nationwide Arena or The Shot, which is 15,000 to 16,000. And, you know, I still feel... I watched the Columbus Crew were allowing people in the stands this past weekend. And my wife and I are just like, nah, man, that's a pass from us. We're okay. You know, we really don't want to do that. And then we saw the seating on TV and we're like, yeah, we're really glad we didn't do that. And it really is one of those things that I'm kind of, I've been picking and choosing which situations seem better than others, because I just feel like some people have handled it better than others. Like, when I watch AEW, like, I cringe how many people are there sometimes. Like, I feel like they've kind of had a problem from the jump in that department, and it hasn't gotten any better since they invited fans in, like, real fans.
I mean, I know they kind of, like, people get stir crazy, and I've gone to the movies when they open back up, and just feel like it's like going to movies on apocalypse. Like, you know, a movie theater with 100 seats, it's like six people in there. And you can get popcorn and drinks and nothing else. Like, seeing Tenet with, like, three other people just felt weird. I'm like, I'm enjoying this, but it ain't, not really. Like, so, and we was wearing a mask, and it was social distancing, and that's fine. Nobody's screaming and shouting, so that's relatively safe. You want to do a wrestling event with your mask on? Like, are you really trust wrestling fans? Like, don't take your mask off. Just keep it on while you're cheering. Like, no. And, So if you're not going to have your mask on, it don't matter. You know, it's an event where you're only going to be spaced out that much and you're doing a whole bunch of shouting and screaming. You're just asking for trouble. And I'm like, I know people want to go out and do stuff. I get that. And part of me too, but I'm like, it ain't worth it. You go ahead and do it, then you die. Like, you kill Granny just to see Roman Reigns. Like, no. Or what if you get Roman Reigns sick? Like, no. So they keep, sooner or later, you know, it's just weird. Because sooner or later, Vince is going to push it. Like, we need to have people in the arena. Because even football is like, some states they letting teams have fans a certain percentage. And some states they're not. And it's kind of like, I don't know if it's an unfair advantage or a fair advantage, but it's like, you got a stadium with like 80,000 people and you got 11,000. What's the point?
Oh, yeah. Like, you really, especially in like 9/10 at least of the stadiums, you need more than that percentage of fans to be, and I even hate to use the word competitive advantage, because I'm not always completely sure how much the hometown fans really add to that. So, yeah, I don't think 11,000 people at Arrowhead possibly tomorrow is going to make that much of a... It's not going to be the dreaded Arrowhead Stadium of old.
Yeah, that Kansas City war cry is going to sound real pathetic when it's like 200 people doing it.
Yes.
It's just weird seeing, like, you know, football's here. It starts tomorrow. And we're just going to see how things go. And I'm like, I know wrestling going to keep an eye out because they're like, you know, we need that Royal Rumble money. Tickets and everything. And like, you know, you missed out on one WrestleMania. I know they're hoping that they get another one, but I'm like, if you don't have a vaccine, you're not having WrestleMania. Like, you're just not going to do it. Like, people, even if you say people can go, people are not going to travel like that. Like, the movie theaters are open. Some people go to movies, most people stay in their ass home, as they should. It's like, if WWE say, oh, we're going to have the Royal Rumble and a 40,000-seat arena, it's going to be something that's going to go. Most people are like, I ain't going. Like, I watch on the award-winning network. Why would I take that chance?
Yeah. I don't want to get on a flight currently. B, more than likely, anywhere that I want to go at this point, I've kind of crossed off in the driving department. At this point, I really don't want to do more than probably about 12 hours for any, and that's really pushing it.
Man, I ain't trying to do that for nothing. You could have said 3 hours, and I would have said the same thing. People are insane. 12 hours each? Nah, that's all right. I'm too old for that. And the whole thing, Mania's in Los Angeles. Like, I'm seeing pictures of California. It's 12 o'clock, and it looks like the same. It looks like it's nighttime. Like, I'm seeing these Mad Max Fallout pictures because the damn state's on fire. So, no thanks. Between COVID and Fury Road, nah, I'm fine.
Oh, man.
I saw a picture. I'm like, it's 12:30, and it's orange. It's dark orange outside. Like they use the camera filter from traffic. And I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah, does not seem like a fun place to visit at the current moment. I will admit that Los Angeles was and still is on the list of places to visit, but the current moment, maybe not the best choice. I might wait till WrestleMania 2024 comes back to LA.
Yeah, Baron Corbin fighting for the title. Fighting Jeff Hardy. And I'm looking forward to that tag match, Street Profits versus Cesaro and Nakamura.
Especially if they're doing a non-title match first and they're going to do some type of a rematch at Clash of Champions.
Yeah, so, and one more thing before we go. Only at WWE will somebody drop the ambulance that took them out the previous week to a fight. So seeing Drew McIntyre just drive that same coming back from the medical center and just doing the same thing to Randy Orton that Randy Orton did to him. It's kind of like, hey, they let the babyface get revenge. So kudos to that. So,
fair enough. That is a good point. Babyfaces have not gotten a whole lot of revenge as of late on WWE TV. So that is worthy of note for sure.
And Randy Orton stayed in character. No matter he's coming or going to arena, he will not have pants. He's alert. If it's not an Evolution interview, he is not wearing pants. And I will never go to the fact when he was going to the Wyatt compound in a limo with tights.
That was by far the most awkward one. That limo one, that is seared into my brain. Like I don't remember a damn thing about that match at all. But I remember him being in pants going there and going, what the fuck is going on with Randy Orton?
I remember that match in the dirty-ass house, and I remember Randy Orton standing over the house as it burned to the ground doing the Randy Orton pose. I'm like, wait. Is Randy Orton with a baby face? Because this seemed like a scene out of a horror movie. And, yeah, kudos to Randy Orton. He's having an awesome 2020. And who saw it coming? I certainly did it. Between in real life on social media and the rest of the ring, this is the year of Randy Orton. So I'm a fan of young Randall.
Yep, good old Randall. Okie dokie. With that, I will mention in passing that I have finally finished the beer that the last time I traveled outside of the state of Ohio, which was way back in March, early March. Why am I brain cramping? Oh, Insurrection Ale Works, Natural Splendor IPA. If you're more daring than myself to travel out of state, have fun. Go get their beer. It is pretty tasty and a nice little place on the west side of Pittsburgh. That's at Philly Drugs. I'm at DeFrango 11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever else. And I am going to get the floor to Shahid since he knows how to do an outro.
For Kevin DeFrango, I'm Shahid Duhardi, and always wear your mask because the sky is on fire. We are out.